Welcome to Media Hotshots, a series of interviews with some of the most celebrated editors in lifestyle, fashion, beauty, and interiors media today. All of the editors interviewed in this series subscribe to PR Shots and Press Area, and the majority of those have said that they heavily rely on its service in order to make their jobs easier. Therefore, the opportunity for you and your brands to gain more coverage into their pages is made all the more possible, and this series of interviews is aimed at not only celebrating their lives, but to help provide you with some golden nuggets that, if used, could make you a complete hero. So I want to welcome to Media Hotshots Anna Morley, style editor for Real Homes magazine, who has, again, along with all of our other editors that we've interviewed, had an amazing experience over the last almost 20 years, I think it is. Would you say that?
Maybe like 10, 15.
10, 15 years.
Maybe
okay.
15. Yeah.
Okay.
But you had to hear that it's 20, really. Thank you.
Well, it's just, you know, you've got great experience. That's the good thing.
Okay.
You've been all the way from being photographer manager at Zuma Press in LA, which you spent a lot of time
Correct.
In, which is brilliant. All the way, you went on to the dark side as well, went to Weber Shandwick as well, which is a bit interesting.
I did, up north, up in the Dizzy Heights of Scotland.
Oh, wow, okay. So, and then went back into publishing as a picture editor at Thomson Reuters before then getting back as a style editor for Essential Kitchen, Bath and Bedroom magazine.
That's the name, well done, yes. And all of those names.
One big, massive area. They cover a lot of stuff there, obviously.
Exactly.
Great. And then you did a bit of freelance for a little while before going back into working as a homes content editor for Centaur, before becoming now style editor for Future Publishing and Real Homes magazines.
Exactly. Yes.
Which is great. What we're going to be doing, hopefully, I mean, during this interview, the slight difference we're going to have here is we want to sort of, I guess, get to understand a bit more about you, Anna, rather than just really finding out all of the standard stuff that we really want to do. But I mean, obviously, the whole essence of the interview is for us to really help you, to help the brands, to help you, to help everybody, to create that symbiotic relationship, as
beautiful
I say.
Beautiful relationship, yeah.
It is the beautiful relationship between editors and brands. But yeah, anything else that we want to go into, that would be absolutely brilliant. So, okay. So excellent. So with all of that experience as well, what I want to do first is just actually give you a bit of a round of applause as well.
Love that.
Big up yourself.
Can I have that take home every day, every morning?
Yeah, you can. Every morning you wake up, a bit of a cheer.
Yeah,
it's all really
cheer.
Good.
Thank you. That would help.
So that's brilliant. So how are you? And how's things anyway? Obviously, since
everything's
since
good. Currently sweltering because I'm next to a radiator.
Brilliant.
But
that's all good.
No, I'm good. It's sweltering with a large jumper, but I'm very happy.
No, that's great.
Very peaceful. We're gearing up for Christmas. So,
nice.
Yeah.
And a bit of a different Christmas. And we'll get into that as well. But definitely the first question I always ask, really, and I mean, looking at your career, I don't know whether this is the case, but I always ask what happened between leaving school to actually getting into the publishing arena.
So how long have we got, Nick? Because this could take quite a long time.
Yeah, well, as much as you want to divulge, obviously.
I will say that when I left school, I actually kind of wanted to be a photographer or a makeup artist. So I wasn't really on the journalism path. But I'll gloss over some parts and skip to the fact I ended up working in London as a receptionist. And in Essex, I actually worked for a magazine company a long time ago as a receptionist. Maybe got the bug then, I'm not sure. Lots of Photoshop was going on near me, so I don't know. But anyway, I ended up in LA and very randomly worked for a photo agency out there because I did have a bit of a thing for photography. And I was a picture editor out there for a little while. When I came back, guess I lent on that experience a little bit and got a job as a production editor in Weber Shandwick, as mentioned. And I kind of did a little bit of snidey freelance on the side working for one of their newspapers.
Wow.
So I'd go from one job and I'd literally walk to another job and sort of just start up again. I don't know how I had the energy. But anyway, so I was just a picture editor and I really, really enjoyed it. I loved the buzz of working with pictures and in the newsroom, and I just loved it. And so just before I left Scotland, there were three telephone numbers pinned up on a computer, and I basically just wrote them down, took them back to Essex, and rang all three of them and asked them if they had any jobs going. Brilliant. So complete chancer.
Yeah, yeah.
And Reuters, for some reason, just said yes. So I got a job at Reuters, working in their Fleet Street office.
Wow.
On the picture desk with, you know, all the proper, you know, all the names I'd seen in the Telegraph so many times. You know, when you look through the newspapers, their bylines.
Yeah.
And I was actually getting their accreditation for games, or like going to, like, if you, they did a lot of royal events, so I had to get, you know, get people signed off. And then I was an editor as well.
Wow.
So then I think it was more my love of photography that then eventually, after quite a lot of other random false starts, shall we say, I ended up, a friend of mine in Essex just said, you know, she worked on a magazine called Real Magazine, not Red Magazine, Real Magazine.
Yeah.
I think you might not be familiar with it because it's not actually in publication anymore. But anyway, she said to me, there's a job going as a style editor on EKBB magazine. So I just applied for it and, you know, was completely honest with everything and I got the job. So that's how I started in my proper publishing career, I suppose you'd say.
Yeah.
And as a stylist, I would go on all the shoots and I'd assist the stylist. And I'd put together, you know, briefs for them. And then I eventually started to style on my own shoots.
Wow.
And then I left there to move to the Midlands. And I worked for an interior design company, styling people's show homes. So that was a very, very enlightening job. So yeah. If ever you go to a new build and look at the styling, someone's gone around and taken a lot of trouble to do that. So that's... But yeah, so I did that. And I also worked for a flower company, a fake flower company called Bloom, doing their catalogues. So I was styling for them. And then I also worked for Ideal Home as a freelancer. I just went and did a style to shoot for them. And then Period Living magazine.
Wow.
And then they said, we've actually got a job going in our office because, I've sort of made friends with a couple of people. And I applied for the job as a homes content editor in their hub and got the job. Wow. So then I gave up the freelance career and started working for them directly.
Wow, brilliant.
And that's my pathway.
That's brilliant and that's awesome. And when you say you always loved the idea of photography, I mean, you've gone into interiors. Was that always the type of photography that you liked? The kind of, no, okay. So what was it?
Really, no. I just liked photography. Like I liked stock photography, food photography, which I still actually really like. Like I love the artistry of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose I have always been very keen on interiors. Like I suppose there's been an attraction there, but I think I just love photography. Probably not people so much, and it sounds like not portraiture as much, yeah. But more things probably and how they're lit.
Okay.
And I like the shapes. So I think when you're an editor, sometimes they say to you, turn the picture upside down and just look at the shapes of the picture. So I think there's a lot of that. I think that your eye, whether you're trained or not, or if you just got to think, you just know when a picture is working and when it isn't.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think I just like, yeah, all photography really. And like, yeah, interiors is also obviously like it is sort of the dream, like that is to have a beautiful interior. And how to show that is that, and I know how difficult it is because I've been on so many shoots and I know how hard photographers work.
Yeah.
So to, and sort of then to create that and to show somebody else is a lovely thing. And it makes people very happy.
Mm.
So, yeah. So I suppose, yeah, interiors and like, I love a styled shoot, which is a little bit different to when you do a house interior. I love to do that. And I love to do those shoots.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is a styled shoot? Sorry for my ignorance. What's the difference between that and
a styled shoot. So for EKBB, I would call in loads of products from loads of different companies, so like 30 different companies. So look, we had a theme, so let us say tableware, what have you. So you'd go to a nice location and you'd put all these products together and you'd have to run them over like six pages. And you'd have to pull these together and like add flowers and everything. So you're showing people. So it's like a product shoot. You're showing people what these new products are and how they can work together and how to sort of style the flowers and how to sort of set the table or you know, and I absolutely love doing that. I used to do, I did that for years.
Yeah,
a lot of work, but it's really good.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I'm guessing now for working for Real Homes, do you get like commission to then go around to someone's just beautiful house and then just take pictures of their stuff and I guess then organise that and I guess they're happy to show that stuff off because it's like, well, actually, look how brilliant my house is. That's amazing.
Well, exactly that. Like the way houses come to us is a lot of time people will send them to us directly because they're so proud of what they've done. And so then what we do is we commission a photographer and a stylist if I can't go or the deputy stylist can't go. And they basically take props with them or they use if the homeowner's got loads of props, we don't really need to, we just take flowers. And so we still do the propping, but we just have the beautiful background of their house or we're showing the worktops or showing how they've painted a wall or done the wallpaper. And it's all got to look lifestyle and lived in. It can't look stark, so you have to kind of think about how people would really live in it, but very tidily live in it.
Yeah Well, that's awesome. So it is a very aspirational magazine, isn't it? I mean, you get people, I guess, that buy it just because they think, actually, you know what, I want some inspiration for my house and how can I take elements of what other people are doing to bring into that. Get that. And is that the way the magazine works? So is it because you get suddenly lots of people writing in saying, I want to share this, and you then go through a process of discovering which one it is that you want to choose and which one it is you want to go and take pictures of?
Yeah, exactly that. Like we, first of all, is it aspirational or inspirational? I think what the magazine Real Homes tries to do is what it says on the tin. Like we try and be real.
Yeah.
So we're not trying to be too high in the sky, you know, you will never be able to achieve this. We actually do try and make it achievable and let people understand how to do things. And that's really important because I feel like, especially in these times, everybody wants a fix or they want an upgrade or something. But if you look at some of the pages of other magazines, which I absolutely adore, by the way, but you will never live in a house like that. And you don't have windows that look like that and that are floor to ceiling sash, you know. So that's why we need a magazine that will show real people, real homes. So that's what we're sort of trying to do, is make it achievable, aspirational. Maybe that should be the tagline on the brand.
Yeah, okay.
But how do we do that? Was that your question? How does that happen?
Yeah, I guess. And what's your creative process? How do you then just, and I guess
with
just
the home.
Within the magazine, is it like a process of like, well, they've got these images, let's go out and do that? I just want to understand how the whole process works of putting a magazine together, I guess.
So for the homes bit, because I used to be homes editor, which I'm not anymore, but when homes come to us and when I worked doing this, they literally would be coming out everywhere, every which way you can. So they came from homeowners who were just taking snaps of their house and sent them in. Then we had PRs who were trying to push, you know, the kitchen companies, they wanted to like promote, they would be sending them in. And then architects would send them in, photographers would send them, or writers or stylists. So they would come in from all angles. So as my job then, we'd have to kind of get the wheat from the chaff and go through and work out what would make a good front cover, what's got enough light, what have they done? Have they spent too much money? Have they spent not enough, you know, well, not enough money, because anything on a budget is always a good thing. But, and then obviously, will it look beautiful in the pages? So we would go through that process, which was it's quite a big process and a lot of houses to look through. And then we would, the editor, myself and the designer would have a meeting and we'd basically work out which to commission and which to sort of say thank you, but no thank you to. And then we'd commission photographers and stylists and we'd work out which was going to be the cover, which one would throw a lot of weight behind. And that's how it would work. And obviously we were always shooting probably in the season that you're not actually in. So that was always a little challenge, you know, which is going to be spring, summer or Christmas. So trying to think of a lot of things to get a shoot off the ground.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. And so that's when you were home editor. So what's the difference with now you being a style editor? How does that process change?
So back then I used to go and style them, which is still the case. So I still go and style them, obviously, when COVID permits.
Mm.
But in the meantime, so I now have a lot of features to do. So back then I didn't have features. I was just literally commissioning, sometimes writing them, but it was really just, you know, dealing with all the houses. But now I look after 4 features in the magazine, at least maybe 5 or 6. I have some others which I dip into, and sometimes I do. We do supplements every few months and web features. And I used to do a bit of, we had a TV show called Real Homes TV. Oh. Real Homes had their own channel, which they have another one. And basically that's what I do for the magazine. So I do shopping features on trends or furniture pieces, news, decorating. So it's quite different. So my involvement in houses is much less.
So it's interesting as you said that as well. So how do PRs like working with you, and how do you like working with them in order to benefit everybody?
Well, I do like being taken out for a massive lunch, loads of champagne.
And in this day and age, that's happening all the time.
Yeah. I mean, back in the day, I'd say about 8 years ago, that actually happened. But no, how do I like to work with PRs? I like PRs who are actually a little bit attentive to my specific needs, which is probably terribly difficult for them. But, you know, we do build up relationships with PRs, and there's some that are just lovely, and there's some that are so good. And they do understand, and they literally will drop you a quick line and it's helpful. And then there's others who are terribly not unhelpful, but just, so the way I suppose I like to be approached now is, you know, basically the way I work is I actually write to PRs when I'm doing a feature on, say, a trend, let's say, I don't know what, colour blocking. I don't just do willy-nilly searches. Well, I do willy-nilly searches. I do. But I also send out an email to all my best PR people, asking for very specific things. And, you know, that they start to, you know, the people that respond really well and, you know, suggest other things, and then say, do you want anything else? And here's some imagery already, you know, not just, you know, because I'm quite specific and I'm very clear and give examples of what I'm looking for. So some people pick that up straight away and others don't. So that's how at the moment PRs, and I mean, I do feel sorry for PRs at the moment because they can't invite us to press shows anymore. I mean, no. they're virtual ones, but it's just not the same.
No. Yeah.
Cool. So there, it's a bit tricky, but we do rely, which is where PR shots has come in so much. Like I do rely on PR shots a lot. Like, I'm not just saying that because I believe you have some sort of affiliation with them. But I do, you know, like they're invaluable.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's basically all I need a lot of the time is great imagery and information. Like, that is obviously what we're after all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, no, totally. And I guess, is that the way then you use PR shots? Do you actually go in there looking for specific search terms and look for the imagery, or are there particular brands that you go in there to think, actually, what are they doing? How are you influenced? Is it I do
both, actually. Because I definitely think you've got to have a broad range. You can't just keep going to the same companies over and over because people just think you're a one-trick pony. So I try and, you know, hedge my bets, do across a wide range. But I know, like, for John Lewis, for example, they basically sell everything and it's all beautifully shot and it's very high end and it's just gorgeous and it's easy, and they're very, very good at what they do. So you can, it's, you know, but you can't keep putting John Lewis in every single feature. So if I want something like, okay, no questions asked, John Lewis.
Yeah.
But other times, you know, if you're looking for colour blocking, you type in colour blocking and see how well the keyworders have worked that day when they were trying to put the keywords in.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Because I used to do that sort of thing. You know, when I worked in LA, actually, I worked for a movie still imagery, and you have to be very careful with those keywords. Anyway,
oh, okay.
By the by. So I understand what goes into making a library of pictures, and I know it's no easy feat, but yeah, so I look both ways. I look for specifics and brands.
Okay, that's good. And are there any particular brands that you are, I mean, you mentioned John Lewis there, I guess that they're kind of the fail safes, I guess.
They are my dear love. Yeah.
And are there any others that you really heavily rely on, or some that you kind of,
well, do you know, I think Matalan are brilliant, actually. George Home is amazing. Wilco's got some great imagery. Wilco's got brilliant imagery. You can really see when oh, Dan Elm as well. When their lookbooks come out, people have, I just really think people have really upped their game with their lookbooks and their products. I've seen product lines get stronger and stronger and stronger.
Yeah.
And I also, well, we definitely try to have a broad price point. So we don't just choose really cheap. We don't choose, but we try to show people a range so they can see, you know, oh, I can get a gorgeous side table for, you know, £30 or something. Oh, Argos as well. Argos. I mean, don't talk to me about Sainsbury's. I love Sainsbury's.
Okay.
I'm such a Sainsbury's lover.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, that's all good. I've got a massive Sainsbury's here, so it's great. In fact, it was so big that they had to cut it in half and give half of it to Marks & Spencer. I'm like, it's still huge
really,
anyway.
That is too big then. The Habitat are going into this. So I've loved Habitat long before I've ever worked in interiors. I just love everything about them. So maybe I have always been in interiors. Like maybe that has always been a thing. But yeah, so I don't think Habitat can put a foot wrong.
Okay.
And obviously now Habitat and Sainsbury's belong to one another, don't they? So your Sainsbury's are probably going to get all the lovely Habitat stuff. So I'm jealous now.
Oh, lovely. I'll never come out there. That's the thing.
I wouldn't. I'll
go in there for long enough anyway. But when you say as well, they've really upped their game with their lookbooks and stuff. Do you think, and their product lines, do you think, is that down to the buyers or how recently have you noticed that change?
I would say within a year, maybe a little bit more. Like, I do think it probably is down to the buyers. I think there's probably more competition. So I think, you know, supermarkets, no one really wanted to go to a supermarket back in the day and buy anything for the home. It was always a little bit naff. I'm not saying that is a broad statement and it's not true, because I think Sainsbury's has always been really, really good. But other supermarkets, maybe not so good, and maybe the quality is a bit... But now it's so trend-led. It's absolutely lovely quality. And so I've just been very impressed with that. And I would say, within the year.
Yeah.
Wow. I think the competition must have got much stiffer.
Yeah.
And people wanted to have updates. So they just saw an opportunity and they've obviously gone for it. And they've done it very well, I think.
Yeah. And when you're looking for imagery, I mean, what makes a good shot for you? Is there anything specific that you kind of look for? Or is that a stupid question for me to ask?
No, that isn't a stupid question, because there absolutely is things that we're looking for. And it's such a shame when you can tell that. I sometimes look at a whole load of images and I think no one's going to ever use those pictures and they've spent money on it. It looks terrible, sorry to say. But I would think anything that looks like a studio is not going to get used. You might as well just do cutouts. So it's got to have that lifestyle element. So, yeah, put some wallpaper up and CAD. No CAD, thank you. Like, none of that. So I do, and I feel for people who, like, I think bed companies struggle a little bit. I think they sometimes don't have the best ideas. And wallpaper companies do a bit of the old CAD. You know, like it used to be really bad of kitchens, and you're like, that's definitely not a photo.
Oh no. Okay. Well,
it doesn't happen loads. I don't get those images as much because of real homes. We don't get to see those as much, but yeah, they're very suspicious.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, interesting. Okay. So that's good. So if there's a specific style, I guess that brands can think of giving to you, it's just no CAD.
just lifestyle. I think it's got to look a little bit believable. It doesn't have to look like someone's real house, but I think it has to look gorgeous. Like, it's got to look, you know, I mean John Lewis's latest lookbook has just come out, and obviously they are, I would say they're probably the best. I mean everyone does gorgeous ones now, like I say, like even like Wilkinson's and Sainsbury's are gorgeous as well, and Argos is really good.
Yeah.
So they go to a location house and they take all their props and they just make them look, yeah, inspirational, and it's very clear to see what you're looking at, and it's just that. So I think it's got to be a sort of a nice realistic picture.
Okay.
All right. You could actually think, oh, could I do that? So when it's a studio shot, You don't want to do that in your house. So I would never use it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's all good to know. So that's the thing. Hopefully the PRs will be listening and think, actually, we'll make sure we include some of those as
okay,
well.
Okay, I'll cancel that studio shoot.
No, that's done.
Cancel buy some more paper.
So, I mean, one of the things that we noticed during the original lockdown, even though we're back in, seem to be the original lockdown again, part two, we noticed that there were a lot of lifestyle images actually being downloaded as opposed to cutouts, because I'm guessing, you know, editors, picture editors couldn't get out to do stuff. Is that, were you looking for more of that stuff as a result of that? Or has that just been
yeah, 100%. So basically loads of the PRs just couldn't go and do their shoots. So we were waiting for all these probably autumn, winter catalogues to come in, and they just didn't.
No, yeah.
And the spring, summer catalogues are starting to come into us now, but it's dribs and drabs. So there's a massive knock-on effect. People would be writing to us going, we're so sorry, there's a bit of a delay, which of course you understand, but yeah, you have to fill the pages. So we were having to go and definitely rely a bit more heavily on that and change features a little bit, because you couldn't really do trends so much, because it's not obvious how to pick that up. You know, even if you know what the trend is, you can't show other people without any pictures.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was very tricky. And so yes, you were right, that more lifestyle imagery would have got used then.
Yeah. So what did you, because we were actually talking, I mean, I know Julie Player from Bauer Media, she was saying that they ended up doing a lot of interiors, well, not interiors, but actually fashion, like home style fashion and loungewear, but actually getting her family to do it because that was the only way she could possibly get images. Is that, I mean, did you find yourself doing that, or how did you get over that little bit of a weird period?
Well, I think what we did, I remember the first thing I did in lockdown, I did a little video for how to lay a table, because I was like, well, I've got to do something when I'm at home, and I've got to, you know, sort of, if people are, I think what I'm trying to think what month it was, it must have been, I must have done it for a specific season. So what we kind of like, because we have this TV show, so I think there's a bit of that going on, you know, how can we boost some more people, because people couldn't go out and buy the magazine, of course.
Yeah,
it was huge.
Yeah,
there's a bit more focus on web and the TV show, because obviously that's still accessible. But with features, I think we'd went to a little bit more, rather than trends, it was a bit more like rooms. So obviously people still need to decorate their bedroom, so it's different ways to look at doing your bedroom or your or lighting or your kitchen or. So I think we did a bit more room focus rather than trend focus for a little bit. That's how I got around it anyway.
Yeah. And it's interesting what you say there as well, because obviously, I mean, over lockdown and everything, the people's houses became their castles. So people were really looking for magazines like Real Homes, I guess, and they couldn't buy it. So did you notice an upsurge in the TV, and how did that all work out? I guess online subscriptions maybe, I don't know.
Well, we've got quite a good web team anyway. So our website was already very much established and up and running. But obviously we saw there was a big, you know, a surge in people going there, because everyone wanted to know, oh, how do I wallpaper a wall, or how do I do this, or where do I buy that? And so the web got a lot of focus. And so we started writing for web more as well, because we already have a team. But we noticed that our work was like, right, you need to help the web team a bit more.
Yeah.
Which was fine, because it's good to, it's an interesting way to get involved, and it's doing the same thing but differently. So that's, you know, good to know. But and our website, you know, it was, I don't know how you say flying off the shelves when you're talking about websites, really, but it got a lot of views.
Flying off the screens, yeah.
Yeah, it flew off the screens. Yeah. And then subscriptions, you know, that's a big push, I suppose, at the moment, because people still can't get to shops. But in lockdown we launched a new website called Gardening, etc., because if you remember, it was in the summer when it was actually hot, and everyone was going outside and doing what they could with their gardens, making them another room, like making it another room. So we launched Gardening, etc., and that also went really, really well as well. I mean, that's now, you know, sort of established now, just a few months in. So I think the company I work for did kind of, they rode with it, they didn't fight against it. They kept thinking, well, what do people need?
Yeah.
They're at home, they're in their garden, so what can we help them with? They can't get to shops. Mm. So they did up their presence online, and all the, obviously all the features were very, you know, literally one, I think one of the best stories they had was, where do you buy antibacterial wipes? Oh, or, you know, something really like basic like that. And it was so many people because, you know, everything was so scarce. So, yeah, so they really moved with it. So that's what was going on sort of behind the scenes, was all this web activity.
Yeah. Wow. And has that continued as a result of that? Because I guess it should work well together anyway.
It has. Yeah. Yeah. So they even took our editor away and put them gave our editor to Living Gardening, etc. So we're actually a person down.
Oh, wow.
So they really have like really, really focused on that actually.
Yeah.
So. Blimey. Yeah, it's been an interesting time.
Yeah, definitely. And how have things changed as a result of COVID? I mean, were you working from home anyway, Jem? I mean, I guess you're probably always working on site anyway, so perhaps you're not really in the office, as it were.
Well, I am a funny case. I suppose I was working one day a week in the office, two from home. Everyone else was working, you know, we had an office in sort of the Midlands. We all got sent home, everybody in the company, and then they closed our whole office down permanently. So after a few months of working from home, so when this finishes, we won't be going back, but the London office stays open. We've got a Bath office that will stay open. But yeah, so my commute is walking to a different bedroom. <in my
house. laughs> Shorten that a little bit.
And that's it. You know, that is our thing. So we're hoping one day to actually meet up, because team meetings prior to COVID were obviously face to face, which is quite a nice thing to do.
Yeah,
of course. And so that's really changed, and that's, so we now have to try and have team meetings over the phone, which is, you know, over Zoom or what have you, and it is, as you know, it's tricky, and there's always doorbells ringing or a dog or someone's husband walking behind them, or there's always some situation which can liven it up really. But
well, it's true. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's real life now, isn't it? People really appreciate that. You actually get to know the person a little bit more. Everyone's a bit more vulnerable because it's all real going
on.
It is true.
But yeah, so there's been quite a few changes really from real homes.
Yeah. And how do you work with your team, and how has it changed as a result of COVID? Or do you work exactly the same way, but how do you actually work with your team now?
So we do work in a very sort of similar way. They, like I said, they were in the office a bit more than I was, but so we have regular team meetings, because we obviously, with all magazines, as I know you know, but we've obviously got deadlines. We've got to know where everything is in the magazine. So we really have to keep on top of that all the time.
Yeah.
So we have regular team meetings. We use, I don't know what it's called, you know, some sort of chat messenger. So if you've got quick questions, which normally you'd be able to go shout across the room to somebody. And totally. Then now we shout across, you know, instant messenger.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've had loads of structural changes, which has been quite interesting to have to deal with. But that's obviously not the way of life. But, yeah, so it's still the same. In fact, we've got the same structure, but we just have to communicate differently.
Yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah. Okay. And I guess what I'm getting to as well is, how can PRs and brands actually help you with all the changes that are going on? Because obviously, I guess it has affected things. How can they actually help you to help themselves effectively?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I feel for them because they couldn't go out and do photography. Completely an absolute nightmare. But I think things are starting to change because we're starting to definitely see these lookbooks come in. So I suppose, I mean, I feel like they're quite adaptable. PRs are adaptable and they do know what's going on. So loads of the press releases that I get have really got that, you know, work, you know, how to zoom your background of your meeting, and so imagery that would go with how to style, you know, your, so people have moved with that, which is good because it does make you generate ideas which are more current.
Yeah.
What I'd always want from a PR is clear communication. So, you know, if something's new, because I do the news pages for the magazine, so I'm always looking for new products. And so if they've got, you know, new products that are going to help people during these times, that's really helpful. You know, like we're always trying to do like roundups of things that people are going to just genuinely find really useful. So if a PR thinks this isn't very useful and sends it out, you know, it's not useful. You've got to think, you know, we're all normal people and we're all trying to do the same thing. So is it kind of realistic what they're sending?
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
So I think there could sometimes be a little bit of pause for thought on, is this genuinely helpful?
Yeah.
Or am I just bashing something out? Or can I phrase it in a way where it would be more helpful?
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe something like that. But yeah, I'm a sucker for a high res. I love a high res image.
Okay, that's great. So, that's always good. Yeah. And again, actually talking about that, because some of the feedback I've had from a lot of the editors is that they don't really necessarily like a lot of high res images being sent to them. They prefer perhaps a low res image on an email itself being sent to you, so you can then choose and say, well, actually, can I have that in high res? Is that how it works for you? Or is it?
Yeah. So if someone was sending out a press release, and let's pretend it's a new sofa, and they're going to attach 5 pictures of the new sofa, don't need them all in high res. You're right. Just to see what they've got available.
Yeah.
I might not ever want to see the sofa again, or I might want to put it in the news feature, or I might want to cut out and a high. So yeah, I think low res is quite handy then. And then you can go back and ask for them again. I don't actually mind getting high res because they don't block up my email. But sometimes I ask for imagery of very specific things, and then I get loads of low res images, and I think, well, you might as well send me high res images because I am actually looking for that. So now I've got to write back to you again and go, yes, can I have them in high res, please? Which is what I wouldn't need in the first place.
Yes.
But maybe that's not a good thing to say.
No, it is. Well, I mean, that's exactly the thing to say. I mean, I'm guessing this is what the feedback we've got, because actually it's great that you don't have that lock-on space, so you can get a lot of high-res images. But a lot have said that's why we like PR shots, because actually we can go in there, everything's there anyway, and we can download what we need without having to rely on anybody getting back to us with high-res shots at a time, because you could be working 10 o'clock at night and the PR's probably not going to be doing that.
Exactly. Well, this is the thing. This is why I do kind of a 3-phase approach. Like I'll send my email out to a load of PRs, and I'm talking about like maybe 40, so a good amount, and then I will go and look on PR shots, then I might go and look on a couple of others, so I don't rely on one or another.
Yeah.
And obviously you've got, and I've had been having press releases come through as well, which I've been siphoning off into folders, so I know what's out there anyway. So I've already got a few already going.
Mm.
So, and you know, so that's kind of, you're nearly there. So yeah, I kind of do a bit of everything.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, I do use PR shots a lot, and I do find it incredibly useful.
Yeah, no, that's good. But I mean, I guess, and I wasn't looking for that, but I mean, that's brilliant. And I love you saying
PR shots.
It's amazing. It's brilliant.
The best.
Because I thought you were going to say there when you said, oh, perhaps I shouldn't say that. But a lot of people have been saying that WeTransfer just seems to be a nightmare, because they'll send you images. You don't need it there and then, but later you'll come into it and go, actually, I really want to do that. But the link's expired, and you're like, what the hell? And nobody seems to want to pay for it, which is just really weird. So it's just a bit of a strange one. So I'm guessing that's probably a bit of a...
You're right. Because because people do WeTransfer me, and you've got to be hot on it. You've got to straight away get onto it, because otherwise then you've got to go back and have another link. And that is a bit of a faff. So yeah, I think some people can do it where you actually, there's no end limit, but is that people who pay for it?
I think it's a paid for service, but I don't know anyone that pays for it myself. So
no,
I don't know. But
I don't.
It's a bit of an interesting one.
I guess someone must be, but yeah. yeah. So if you're in the WeTransfer, you've got to be pretty quick off the mark when they come in.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And it's, I mean, one of the, and a few of the editors, but actually Katie Wright from the PA said, and I had never thought of this, but actually when she's looking for particular themes or whatever, she'll keep everything in her email box, and then she'll do a search for that particular theme. So one of her suggestions was, just make sure when you're emailing, put it in the headline, or just make sure that everything's relevant, so that when I do eventually look for it, and I will look for it if they're looking for it, but that was a nice little trick to...
I 100% agree with her. That's exactly what I do as well.
Okay.
I will always do a search in my email first, because I know 10 to 1 there'll be... I mean, you obviously, I get so many emails every day.
Yeah.
You can't chase every single thing or file every single thing. So yeah, having the keywords that you're looking for, like I'm looking for side tables at the moment. So if anyone sent me a side table, as long as they've written it in there, then it will get a look. So yeah.
Okay.
That's a really, really good, very, very good tip.
That's brilliant. So if you're looking for side titles, what we'll do is we'll come on to what you're looking for at the moment, just because actually I'm looking to post this before Christmas so that hopefully you might be able to get some help in what you're looking for there. But one thing I was going to say, what I ask all of the editors, what are your top three pet hates and what are your top three loves that you love PRs doing?
Okay. I need some notes, actually.
This is all good.
Okay, so what are we doing first, loves or hates? Should we go hates first?
Yes, I think so. I think that's probably the best
one. I'm going to say hates. Let's say dislikes.
Dislikes, yes.
More gentle. Okay, so here's one I've had in the past week or so. So when you ask a particular PR, so you know that a PR works for a company, and you say, could you get me this very specific item? Here it is. Here's a picture of it. And they write back straight away and go, yep. Absolutely, no problem. I'm on it. And then you never hear from them again.
Oh, wow. Blimey.
Yeah. And I will not name names, but there is a particular PR company which that has happened to more than once. And they're quite new to working with a particular brand.
Oh, wow.
So I am a little bit unimpressed because you're like, well, just tell me, like, if you can't find it,
yeah,
tell me, because I'll move on really quickly. Like, I'll just go and find something else. But you sort of hang on and hang on. Then you chase them and then they go, and then they don't come back again. And then you're like, well, that's just poor, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you at least come back and say, I'm really sorry, that's not available. Or for some reason you can't have it. So that's a little bit of a pet peeve, let's say.
Yes.
Sometimes you ask for an image and it comes over and then you look on the website. We have to fact check absolutely everything, which I'm sure every single person you've spoken to is, so we nothing goes out without me checking every single thing on my feature and a sub checking it as well. So it's got to be watertight. So then I ask for something, it comes over and it's out of stock already. And I think, why did the PR not maybe check that and just say, here's something similar, but that you can't have that one, but here's another one. So that's always a little bit, that would be very helpful to be stopped in my tracks before I go and try and use something.
Yeah, sure.
I know somebody else said this answer as well. I think I sometimes get emails saying, what are you working on? Like very generic, like, hello, you, what are you working on?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I'm probably not going to write back and list the very specific things I'm writing on because I do call outs anyway. Unless I can see it's a company which is probably going to have that specific thing, then I probably won't. And also I work on news pages. So I'm like, anything new, and that can, it literally can be anything. So,
yeah.
So yeah, that, I think that email is a little bit unhelpful.
Yeah. I think
maybe they should approach us and say, look, here's some new things that we've got going. Does anything tickle your fancy? Like, can I help, you know? I always think it's a bit of a waste of an email, really.
Yeah. I guess it's a bit of a phishing. I think it was Linda Bell that said that for Good Housekeeping. She was saying, yeah, that kind of like speculative, hi, hun, what's going on? really friendly. No,
but there's one lady who does it, who, and I don't know why, I don't know her, but she's lovely. And she goes, hi, what are you working on? But then she'll go on to say, here are the brands I work on, because she knows I don't remember every single person. And here's a little update of five new things that have just come out. So it's just, that's really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I end up using, and she attaches high-res images as well.
Oh,
so,
wow. Awesome.
So she is all in all. That's very helpful.
We should probably give her a shout out.
Her name's Az, A-Z, Azalea. Oh,
well, there we go. Brilliant. There you go. So Az, you're doing a good job. It's awesome.
You're doing a good job.
Brilliant. So that's your pet hates.
Yes.
What are your pet loves, would you say?
Okay. So I love a good old clearly written press release telling me what is new or why they've emailed, because sometimes it's, you have to really be very careful how they're written, because sometimes they're a little bit sneaky. They'll say a new imagery perhaps,
okay,
or it will kind of imply it's new, but it absolutely isn't. And okay, it's fine if it isn't, but you need to know whether it is or it isn't.
Yes.
So clearly written with images you can see, because sometimes I get images that are tiny all over the page. I sometimes wonder if they should send it to themselves, a PR, before they send it, so you can see how it actually reads on someone's thing. Because anyway, so there's some people who do it beautifully and it's very clear. It's very attractive. You know exactly what they're writing about. And it's a summary, and it's giving you maybe an idea for a feature. And it's got all the information on and the prices, because the prices are really important. It's no point sending me a throw, for example, which could be £20 or £500, because I need to know where we're what going you're with it. So, yeah, so information and clearly labelled, let's say.
Yes, okay.
I do, as I've mentioned before, I do love a high-res image. I love to say download images from here. I love that. I love it. I love it. It makes my life so much easier. Even if sometimes it's just, I can chuck it in a folder and it can sort of generate me some ideas, or it can be like the launch of something, or it just really, really helps. I mean, other people it clogs up, but it doesn't seem to clog up mine. So I'm kind of like all for a high-res.
Yeah.
I'm also really interested in trends. Like I do a lot of trends, and sometimes this is a bit of a pet peeve and a pet love. Sometimes companies clearly just round up a load of things that they've just got lots of, you know, like things with bubbles on or things that are blue, and you're like, I know that's not a trend. So are they reading a trend correctly, or are they just trying to flog some blue stuff? And I think that's a little bit, again, a bit like bit of a gray area. So I like to see what's a real trend.
Yeah.
And someone who's actually done a little bit, is it maybe a little bit of research, or there's a bit of a, you know, I don't know. So I'm all for a trend. I do love spotting trend as early as possible, because that's obviously my job.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anything like that, I love that sort of thing.
I guess that's the thing. You don't know. I guess you don't know it's a trend until you see other people doing it as well. So it could well be that you've seen something come through and you think, well, that isn't. But, oh, actually it is, because other people are saying it. So it's getting it early enough. So
yeah.
How do you then investigate that? Do you just do a search online, or how do you check the validity of that trend?
Well, I think, and that basically when you start to look through people's lookbooks, you can see what's in the background. So it's not always what they sell, it's what's in the background. So when people, for example, when colors are coming in, they will, on like photo, whoever has done the photo shoot will have got a big pink board and just stuck it at the back. So it's nothing about what's in front, it's all about what's going on at the back. Or they'll do color blocking, like, you know, or they'll do something which like dried flowers. Like loads of these companies don't sell dried flowers, but dried flowers are huge. So they've all got these props of dried flowers. So you just start, so it's nothing that you're reading about. You're starting to just see it all come through. And they're obviously, you know, there's these trend forecasters, and, you know, people are obviously, you know, like all the eco stuff, you can just see all that, you know, all the natural things. People jump onto that quickly. So it's about starting to eye in the back of, I think that's what I always do, I eye in the back of pictures what's going on, and the rippled effect, you know, like, or the ribbed. So people started doing that, and then they started to bring out the products with it on as well.
Okay.
So then you know that's, you know, that's happening, that's going to be starting to come through.
And what would you say was the best campaign you've ever had, where you've just thought, actually, you know what, you're awesome, I'm covering you just because that has just got me?
That's happened quite a lot of times, actually, where I'm so impressed with how everything about, they're so slick and this is a really good product. But I probably can't call it to mind right now, but I would say the most recent one, and it's very recent, was made.com did a launch called The Apartment.
Okay.
And it was about a month ago, probably, maybe a month and a half. And it was obviously during these COVID times, and they sent out a thing called the tour. And so basically you could go around, and it was a tour of an apartment. They shot it in Amsterdam, and you could it was so clever. It was really interactive. So I like their products. So they're beautiful products anyway. It was really clear, very modern, and you could go around and click on all the products and just see how much they cost, linked to the website. It was so user friendly.
Yeah.
So I immediately featured that, because, so the first feature you come to is my news stories. And so I was like that. And so that was the lead story, because I was like, they're such good products. And it wasn't just for PRs either. People could go on and do this themselves.
Wow. Brilliant.
It was really good. I thought they'd obviously spent a lot of money on it. They'd really put a lot of time in it. We even had like, virtual reality box, like a cardboard box. I don't know how you say it, like, you know what I mean,
where
you VR and you have a look through. So they did, they covered all bases. It was really, really well done.
Oh, wow. Brilliant.
So that's the most recent. But I mean, back in the day, had some incredible PR events back in the day, but that's the most recent one I can remember.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. Because my next question was going to be to you as well about how you find in the virtual experience, but I'm guessing made.com have done a brilliant one there. Cause that essentially was.
They did. I think they've absolutely nailed it.
Yeah.
Without doubt. I mean, I haven't been to loads of them because I've missed various ones for various reasons. But I like the fact that you get a link now and you can go in. So sometimes at your leisure, because sometimes it's difficult with around meetings that you can't get in and out of, or deadlines, and you're like, I'm going to struggle to get to this.
Yeah,
So sometimes you can just go in, have a look yourself. And I know other ones, I think Next did a really good Christmas one. I missed that one, which I'm a bit gutted about still. But it's not the same, is it? Like, it's not the same. It's lovely to go to press shows and go and actually, you know, touch things and look at things and talk to people. But, you know, I think people are embracing it really, really well. And
yeah. And that's interesting, because that's the feedback I've had as well. Because when you used to go out to real press days, obviously your attention was totally engrossed with what was going on because you were immersed in the whole experience. Whereas now, because it's more digital, you've got so many other things going on. It's quite easy to be sidetracked. And what is it what are you working on at the moment? Because obviously timelines and stuff, is it? Are you on spring?
We're on spring. So we're on April now.
Okay.
And so I'm doing a decorating feature on basically spring updates, which is hopefully just going to be a really pleasant, basically, obviously, with, you know, coming out of the winter, which we will be, we just want a really nice, like, how to basically welcome spring into your home. So I'm looking for lifestyle images that kind of give that really spring feel.
Yes.
Ideally new. So that's why I'm looking through all the lookbooks at the moment. And then I'll do a page of cutouts as well. Mm. So what might, you know, it's not completely worked out yet. Normally I start to work on things and then I might work out I work with a designer a lot, how we're going to, because we don't have them exactly the same. We know how many pages, but we tweak them so readers don't get bored, really. And I don't, you know, none of us get bored. It's actually, you know, interesting. And so, yeah, spring, lots of spring imagery, spring updates. And I'm doing something on side tables, because who doesn't need a side table?
Yeah, of course, totally. No, you're right. Okay.
Yeah. And then we're doing something else on the new Pantone colours.
Okay.
Shopping page on that, which is, I don't know what you'd, I mean, a very bright yellow and a grey.
Okay.
But they're a little bit controversial.
Oh, okay.
Yes. They're what? I might eat my words, but with all the muted hues around at the moment, there is quite a contrast, shall we say. The yellow that they've picked is, I wouldn't even call it a canary. I'd go much more
custard.
I'd go stronger than custard.
Wow.
I'd go nuclear custard.
Wow, blimey, there we go. Wow.
You should have a look at it.
That is controversial, definitely.
Yeah. Well, it's gonna be very curious how that plays into people's houses. Like, are people really gonna pick up on that?
Mm.
Or is it so that I'm gonna be really interested to see over the next few months how many people embrace I think it's called illuminating yellow.
Okay. Oh wow. Well, I'll look out for that, definitely. I'll be a lot of sunglasses.
Get a cushion.
Yeah, definitely. I think I have to wear shades. It'll be the future.
Or not,
maybe
get a cushion or not.
So when you say, obviously, you need lifestyle imagery, I'm guessing that's what you're going to be needing as well. But, I mean, with regards to shooting, you mentioned earlier, obviously with spring, I guess you can't even go out there to take the shots now, can you? Because it's not like you could Photoshop anything up to make it look like that. So you're heavily reliant now on the lifestyle shoots.
Yeah, massively reliant, yeah. I mean, with my features, we would maybe use, like you say, like maybe we'd use a case study, as in a homes, imagery from homes. But I tend to use press imagery.
Yeah.
So that's, I do rely very heavily on PR shots and what people send me.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. And I'm just thinking, is there anything else that you need at the moment? I mean, obviously you've mentioned side tables, and I'm guessing anything with this new illuminating yellow Pantone.
Yes. Well, and exactly. I am always, I basically do the news. And so for my news pages, I look for about 15 news stories. And so I'm always looking for anything that's like just interesting and a little bit different and maybe a bit fun, something that would be homes related. So always, I'm always looking for that. And it imagery wise, it can be lifestyle or cut out. I always look for books as well.
Okay. Oh, wow.
So yeah, so I'm always on the hunt for that.
Okay. So that's always good. So anyone that's listening to this, that's got that, they can just contact you and just get that strength sent straight out to you.
Exactly. Yeah.
But listen, I really want to thank you, Anna. It's been absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much. And if there's anything you need, obviously let us know. But good to speak to you. And and Merry Christmas.
And to you too. Absolutely.
And have a great new year.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right then. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
So if you like that discussion and you'd like to be alerted of future interviews with lifestyle editors, just make sure that you hit that subscribe button. And if you liked it and want to receive a breakdown of tips from all of the editors included within this series and many more, and be entered into a prize draw to win a £50 Amazon voucher, please leave a review within the Apple Podcast app, take a screenshot and send it to us at info@prshots.com and you'll be entered. This is brought to you by me, Nick Osborne, with us, Press Area and PR Shots, experts in helping PRs and brands gain coverage.